Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 08-7122, Henry U-Haul International, Inc., petitioner, Mr. Scarborough for the petitioner, Ms. Erdley for the respondent.
Good morning.
May it please the court, my name is Larry Scarborough. I represent U-Haul International, and I've informed the court I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, if I might. State as succinctly as I can, the issue in this case is whether an action brought by Mr. Margolis on behalf of himself and others similarly situated, seeking actual, statutory, treble, and punitive damages on behalf of every consumer renting a U-Haul trademark truck in the district resembles, and I choose that word intentionally, a class action for purposes of diversity removal jurisdiction. We're here originally on a petition for permissive review, so I would be remiss if I didn't start by saying that the principal reason this court ought to grant the petition and to proceed to resolve the issue is that, if left unchecked, the decision below and the decision in Brakeman before it stand as an open invitation to state legislatures and local authorities to CAFA-proof their legislation in ways that would undermine completely the purposes of the CAFA legislation.
Well, to what extent did Congress anticipate that?
Congress anticipated in the legislative history, in the cases, and in the statute itself, a broad definition of what would be considered a class action for purposes of removal jurisdiction, because we submit it wanted the courts to be able to apply flexibly the definition to whatever state legislatures might choose to do.
And how are we to read Congress's definition of mass action as, I gather you think it's totally irrelevant to our consideration of whether the plaintiff's complaint is a class action?
We do. And the reason we do is that mass action is itself a defined term. It's very clearly defined. It's defined as a number of enumerated plaintiffs greater than 100 who proceed in an action where some class action indicia, those are my words, that relate to common questions might also appear. There can't be any question in this case that this is not a mass action.
Even if you, I understand your argument, but you have a fallback position that the exception would still not apply here?
That the mass action exception would not apply?
The one for all the claims asserted on behalf of the general public. Even if we look to that section as helping us to understand the meaning of class action, I take it your position would still be that this is not a claim on behalf of the general public, with the caveat of the parenthetical, and not on behalf of individual claimants.
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. One goes back to the complaint, which is the touchstone for this court's analysis, and again, one sees that it's not a suit brought just on behalf of the general public. It's brought by Mr. Margolis. It's brought on behalf of others similarly situated, and unlike the public type of suit in which disgorgement or injunctive relief is sought, this seeks recovery of damages for each and every consumer.
I mean, private attorney general actions have been around for a long time in various forms. And isn't that what the D.C. Council has enacted here?
There are aspects of private attorney general actions, Your Honor, that might fall under CAFA definitions under each type of case. So I want to start by saying that doesn't resolve any issue here. We've looked at the legislative history. You'll note that none of it was briefed by either side here.
No, but I'm trying to understand why Congress included this language in the CAFA statute defining a mass action and then specifically excluded in this subsection 3, the type of action that it appears the D.C. Council has enacted?
Well, I only have the legislative history to fall back on, and the legislative history specifically says that that was designed to take account of the specific law in California known as 17200 that existed before its repeal. We have looked into the legislative history in the D.C. Council and can find no similar statement that would relate that act to anything resembling what goes on in California. One has to remember that apart from what can be said about 17200 in its prior form, this is an action that seeks damages. It seeks affirmative damages on behalf of a large group of people, and it purports to seek to pay those damages to that class of people. So it's a representative action in that sense. It is not in any sense a mass action.
I take it this argument would not preclude an action under the D.C. law if the action were limited to damages to the general public or injunctive relief that did not require individualized determinations. For example, imagine the District of Columbia suffered economic injury to the District of Columbia so that individualized, particularized determinations wouldn't be required. Your argument would not necessarily apply to that kind of statute.
Applying the CAFA.
Is that a yes or a no? Am I right about that or not?
You are correct.
Okay.
The CAFA statements would encompass the ability to have a removed action or a non-removed action, depending upon what was pled in the plaintiff's complaint. We know, going back to 1938, that attempts, and you've seen them in the response brief here by Mr. Margolis, to subtract the types of relief they're seeking or to characterize that relief under the Supreme Court's decision in St. Paul carry no weight in terms of the inability to oust, I believe is the appropriate term, a federal court from jurisdiction. One has to go back to the complaint, and yes, Judge Garland, the way this complaint is drafted, it falls within CAFA removal, whereas one could seek relief that potentially could fall outside its ambit.
Congress was very specific, though, in CAFA, saying that its terms apply to actions brought under Rule 23 or their state and local equivalents. And here, the complaint is not brought under the local equivalent of Rule 23, but rather under the D.C. statute.
That's right. The CAFA statute.
And why isn't that critical? Since Congress has made very clear when CAFA applies.
The statute, 1332d1b, speaks in terms of cases that are similar to Rule 23, state statutes, or rules of judicial procedure that relate to suits brought on behalf of individuals that are class actions. So the fact that it's a state statute doesn't resolve the issue. It only asks the inquiry of what kind of state statute is it. And I must point out to the court
I was referring to the language of the federal statute.
That's what I'm referring to. It says
action
similar.
Yeah.
But let me read it. Okay. Any civil action filed under Rule 23 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure.
Under Rule 23.
Or
yeah.
Similar state statute or rule of judicial procedure. If that simply meant state rules like Rule 23, then similar state statute would be gratuitous surplusage, and of course we can't have that.
What do you think, what does the legislative history show that phrase was intended to encompass?
It's intended to encompass anything that resembles, the words of the legislative history, a class action, and in that legislative history, the report makes clear that it ought not to be based on the labels that are given, and I think I must say, and I know I'm beyond my time here, Your Honor, I must say that the notion that the CPPA can invoke Rule 23, as all the cited cases we've brought to the court's attention do, and yet have this plaintiff come into court and say, we eschew Rule 23, but we're going to ask the court, when we get remanded, to impose the same types of due process considerations that Rule 23 provides. They say it explicitly in their brief. Those protections, like notice, like opt-out, like the binding of res judicata, if there's a settlement or an ultimate result in this case, to say it would be too clever by half to eschew a form over substance by failing to invoke Rule 23 and yet ask the court to do all those same things and somehow avoid CAFA seems to be in conflict with the statutory terms and the legislative history and the few cases that we've cited to the court.
Is it correct that the D.C. Court of Appeals has yet to rule on these issues?
Well, the D.C. Court of Appeals has never had a particular issue. Of course, it won't have a CAFA jurisdiction issue in front of it.
As to the nature of any due process rights or the nature of the remedies that can be recovered under the D.C. statute.
The cases that we've found and have cited invoke Rule 23 for class actions seeking recovery on behalf of those similarly situated to the representative plaintiff.
So the answer to my question is yes? The D.C. Court of Appeals has not yet expressed any opinion on this question.
I think that's the fairest way to say it, most concretely.
No, I don't mean on this question in terms of CAFA.
I understand.
In terms of the nature of any due process procedural protections or the nature of remedies that can be recovered under the D.C. statute.
No, it's simply invoked in the cases we found Rule 23.
Right. Thank you.
D.C. Circuit 23.
Yes, we'll give you a minute on rebuttal. Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court, my name is Ellen Erdley. I'm from the law firm of Marion Scallet, and we represent the plaintiff, Michael Margolis, in this D.C. consumer action brought in D.C. Superior Court on behalf of the plaintiff and himself, on behalf of himself and the general public. CAFA simply does not apply to the plaintiff's claims because CAFA, by its text, does not extend to actions on behalf of the general public that are authorized by state statute. Section 1332D11B23, which we've already talked about this morning, carves out a specific exception to these very local actions and says this: any civil action in which all of the claims in an action are asserted on behalf of the general public.
I'm surprised by your desire to make this a completely textual argument, because the very first words that you just read are, all of the claims are asserted on behalf of the general public. But in fact, in your complaint, you assert some claims in the prayer for relief on behalf of the individual plaintiff, right? Specifically on behalf of the individual plaintiff.
That is true, Your Honor, but the claims on behalf of the general public that Plaintiff Margolis represents are the primary claim.
Well, so that means some of the claims are asserted, or most of the claims are asserted on behalf of the general public, but not all of the claims, right?
That would be correct, Your Honor.
So
but
you
this
can't make a textual, purely textual argument, correct? I mean, if you ask us to rely only on the exact words, you have to lose. Isn't that right?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because in order for this section of CAFA to be given any weight or effect whatsoever for Congress, it has to apply here, in this case where the claims are brought on behalf of the general public.
It could. You are the one who asked us to look at this section, so that's why I am. But it could, if we were being purely textual, mean that for a plaintiff who is willing to give up his own claims and only ask on behalf of the general public, it applies. But for a plaintiff who wants money himself, it doesn't apply. And this does say all the claims.
Well, the plaintiff would be a member of the general public and would be getting relief under that provision.
So what about the parenthetical, though, in that?
And not on behalf of individual claimants.
Where it says very specifically.
and not on behalf of individual claimants or members of a purported class. Plaintiff Margolis has to be, there has to be someone to represent the general public.
Right, but isn't he seeking recovery on his own behalf as an individual?
He is, Your Honor.
So what do we do about that? I mean, it seems like one way to interpret this section is to say that it applies, I'll leave aside the problem of your plaintiff asking himself, let's get over that, even if we assume the word all means most. But it seems to me that one way to read this is that this is where the claims are brought on behalf of the general public. So for example, as I was discussing with opposing counsel, an injunction on behalf of the general public or damages to the state's economy, but not on a case where, as it says in the parenthetical, on behalf of individual claimants. And that's what you're asking for. I take it that is what you're asking for here, right? On behalf of individual claimants.
On behalf of D.C. consumers who have been wronged under the D.C. statute, yes.
So how is that consistent with the requirement that it not be on behalf of individual claimants?
It's on behalf of the general public who are individuals, but they're not individual claimants in this action.
Well, how is your intention here to prove damages to individuals, that is, to the ones who were misled?
Our intention is to prove liability on behalf of U-Haul for its fraudulent and deceptive consumer practices, which would apply to all D.C. consumers once liability is proven.
Got that part, but what about the money?
Measure of damages.
Yeah.
The measure of damages would be based on each violation.
Right, so if I had rented a car and I claimed I had was owed $200 and Judge Garland had rented a truck and claimed he was owed $500, that would be the measure of our recovery?
The D.C. Superior Court would have the ability to determine.
Right, but the D.C. government wouldn't see any of this money, right?
No, Your Honor, not necessarily. The D.C. Superior Court could read the D.C. statute and determine whether there would be award to the D.C. government underneath the statute. The D.C. Consumer Protection Act authorizes the Attorney General for D.C. to bring actions such as this. So there could be an award to the D.C. government on behalf of when a claim is brought on behalf of the general public. That's something that the D.C. Superior Court and the D.C. Court of Appeals haven't had the ability or the opportunity to decide.
What is your understanding? What do you think the statute means? You think that, from what you answered to Judge Rogers, I take it, that your intention is to prove the damages that I suffered and the damages that Judge Rogers suffered, right?
Yes, our intent is to do that. It's not an uncommon thing for there to be actions on behalf of the general public. For instance, the California 17-200, there are representative actions that were authorized by the California statute. This allows the general public to proceed without an expensive Rule 23 class certification motion.
Let me just see if I understand what you mean. So you would prove damages to me and you would prove damages to Judge Rogers. Would we get the money? Would each of us get the amount of our damages?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
And that's what happened under the California statute, too.
Yes.
Okay. But I take it was also possible under the California statute to bring an injunctive action, just as it is here, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Now, just to follow on the damages claim, if I don't want to join in on this and I want to bring my own suit, would you be able to get damages for me and I could still bring my own suit?
I wouldn't think that would be permissible, Your Honor. Just like under the California law, the California and D.C. courts would be supervising the due process that would need to be afforded to these individuals. So,
in what way is this different than what a class action is?
procedurally it's different. There's no Rule 23 requirement. There's no bifurcation of discovery. It saves the general public time. It saves them money and the expense of the Rule 23 actions. It's something that here in D.C., the D.C. City Council decided would be of value to the general public in enforcing this very important consumer rights statute.
It's easier for the plaintiffs than a class action. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So do you think the purpose of Congress's statute here, which was to put, obviously to put class actions into federal court of a certain kind, was to allow plaintiffs where it was easier under a state statute to go under a state statute? That's the only meaning of the carve-out for state statutes, where it's easier for the plaintiffs? The idea was to allow it to go forward in state court?
I don't think that was the intent of CAFO or really the intent of the D.C. City Council enacting the Consumer Protection Act. There are two main provisions in CAFA. First is the class action provision, and it really is about Rule 23 actions or state Rule 23 actions. That's not what this is. We haven't sought certification. We're not bringing an action under Rule 23. And then the second provision is the mass action provision, which says that certain actions may be deemed class actions. And while this may be deemed a class action, there's a specific exception for it in the statute. And while Congress carved out this exception, I don't think that their intent was to carve out all actions where it's easier.
The exception doesn't seem to be for class actions, though. The exception is to the definition of a mass action. And so how does that doesn't even go to whether or not it's a class action, does it?
A mass action is defined as a class action in the statute. So if in this case we were to ignore the exception for the mass action provision, it wouldn't be given any effect whatsoever.
Well, I mean, it's clear that the way that, at least to me, reading the D.C. statute, that the type of complaint you have filed here is consistent with that statute. It allows you to combine these individual claims and claims for the general public. The only question is it removable under this CAFCA statute?
And
that's what we're struggling
with. And we respectfully submit that the D.C. District Court got it correct and should be affirmed.
Well, I know, but no, I understand that. And two district court judges have basically so far adopted your approach here.
Could a state, under your idea, obviously what's the problem here is for us is how we avoid making a loophole bigger than the size of the entire statute. So could a state have a statute which is in every single way like the federal rule on class actions, Rule 23, but eliminates one section, that is, I don't know, a certification requirement or the notice requirement? Could it do that? And in every other way be identical to Rule 23, but use the language of the D.C. statute?
Could it do that in what?
I think and avoid federal jurisdiction.
No, Your Honor. In that case, the action would be very similar to a class action. It would be an under a rule that was similar to Rule 23.
How far do you have to go? It's fair. So you're focusing on the word similar, as your opposing counsel did. How far does it have to be? What would make it different enough from Rule 23 to come within your exception?
Well, this case, Your Honor, is different enough from Rule 23.
I got it, but the next one.
Well,
it's a good answer.
This case is not under a procedural rule or a state statute that is supposed to be a procedural rule. This is a separate action that's authorized by a state statute. I think when there's a Rule 23 type of procedure at issue, then it's clearly a class action for CAFA's purposes.
So what is the difference between procedure and substance here? This is sort of a classic law school problem, isn't it?
It's a very difficult question, Your Honor, but the D.C. City Council wasn't changing the D.C. Rule 23. It didn't reference the D.C. Rule 23 in this statute. It's authorizing a separate action, which is not similar to the definition of class action in the CAFA statute.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Counsel for appellant. Here, we're petitioner.
Thank you. In my 1 minute, I have 2 points. First, it's not as though Congress did not speak to class action exceptions that were not to be removed. Those are back in the removal section, and they relate to certain kinds of securities cases and corporate governance cases. So Congress did speak to those types of class actions that should not be considered removable. Second point, the court below relied on Brakeman. Brakeman had two grounds. It had classic diversity jurisdiction and CAFA. It gives far more analysis to the classic diversity, very little analysis to CAFA, and in particular, it says, to justify its decision, that the defendant conceded that the suit wasn't being brought as a class action, and perhaps that defendant conceded a little too readily on that point. Thank you.
Thank you. We will take the case under advisement.